Arm Aronson of the Total Sports Recall Podcast here to share a winning strategy for Father's Day from our partners at Sterling Roastery. If your dad treats his morning coffee like a pregame ritual, you need to introduce him to the Sterling Roastery lineup. This isn't that stale, over-roasted stuff sitting on our grocery shelf. Sterling roasts their beans multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. The smart play? A coffee subscription. He gets to choose his grind, from French press to espresso, and his favorite roast, depth. It's a world-class lineup of Java that shows up like a reliable veteran on a perennial powerhouse team. Go to sterlingsoap.com and set him up. He'll thank you with every cup. That's sterlingsoap.com.
Can the 18th pick be the most underrated spot in the NFL draft? History says absolutely. Before Jerry Rice, there was Art Monk, the first man ever to reach 900 catches, snagged right here at number 18. From the NFL's all-time interception king, Paul Krause, to elite anchors like Marquise Pouncey, the 18th spot is where franchises find their backbone. Today, we're digging into the gridiron with legends taken at pick 18. We're joined by our friend Ed Cleese. Once again, let's head into the pig pen. It's Pigskin Dispatch's Draft Countdown.
Hey, Darren, how are you?
I'm doing super, Ed. I can't wait to hear your perspective on some of the players that have been drafted in the number 18 hole of the NFL draft.
Yeah, don't get your hopes up, because this was a little bit of a ho-hum research results here, I'd say.
Yeah, well, the good news is it's not as many Hall of Famers as the 19th spot where we had five. This did have four Hall of Famers drafted out over the last 90 years. Perhaps you'll be talking about one or two of them, but we're going to talk about all of them before the show is over. I think still some decent players.
Yeah, there's some on here. And recently, it's not been great. Gray Zabel was taken by the Seahawks last year, and he's already considered to be one of the better interior O-linemen in the league, and a tremendous year for the Super Bowl champs. So he's off to a good start. Jalen Phillips was taken in this spot. There's not a lot else recently that really stood out to me. And I kind of went, like I said, I'm going all the way back to 1980, and I wound up with a lot of guys that I was kind of like, oh, okay, whatever. Only two quarterbacks have been taken since 1980. We'll talk about one of them here shortly. The other one would be Chad Pennington in 2000. He was the two-time comeback player of the year in the NFL, which is really remarkable. But it also shows that the guy just could not stay healthy. You know, a small guy, an undersized guy, a lot of guts. It was very productive, but really only played a handful of seasons in the NFL with any level of consistency or health.
And probably didn't have played behind some of the best offensive lines in the NFL either.
That's right. Yeah, he wasn't on great teams or anything. So, yeah, but an interesting case there. We've talked a lot about disappointing running backs, and the 18th pick is no exception. Butch Woolfolk in 1982, TJ Duckett 2002, Napoleon Kaufman 1995, and then I've got two kind of sad cases, and one of them is a running back, and that would be Robert Edwards, taken in 1998 by the Patriots. This is really sad. I remember this pretty well. He had a 1,000-yard season his rookie year, and then at the Pro Bowl, playing in a sand flag football game that was, like, you know, on TV, he had a horrific leg injury. If you can handle such things, it's actually, you can find it on YouTube because they were, you know, it was televised. It was a devastating lower leg injury that almost cost him his leg. He tried to battle back. He missed, I think, two or three full seasons. He made it back onto a roster, but just never did anything from there. Like literally almost lost his leg. And poor guy. Yeah, a very promising career taken out really early. And then there was with a freak injury. And then there was another one that I didn't remember or recall, and that would be Don Rogers, was taken in 1984 by the Browns. He was a defensive back. He was second in defensive rookie of the year voting. And then he started all 16 games his second year for some Browns teams that were just turning themselves into a Super Bowl contender in 85. And if you remember, there we talked about, you know, Hanford Dixon and Frank Minifield and some previous pods. They had really good corners, and so he was going to be a safety back there. But after his second year, he died of a cocaine-induced heart attack in the offseason. 8 days after Len Bias died, you know, very famous case in the NBA, and it was the night before Roger's wedding. So a really tragic offseason incident. A young man, you know, lost his life there. But yeah, that was something I didn't really know or remember, and kind of a tough one.
Yeah, well, I didn't remember that either. But how tragic! Probably was overshadowed by the whole Len Bias.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
At that time, that was big news.
It stuck out because I saw he started like all games in his career and then didn't have a third year, and I was like, well, that's weird. You know, usually these guys get a second chance somewhere. And then I read, and obviously that's why. There's one more. There wasn't a whole lot of busts, but there is one I really wanted to point out to you. Do you remember the name Aaron Jones?
Aaron Jones. Well, I
not the
Aaron Jones. It's not the Aaron Jones I'm thinking of, though.
Your Steelers took defensive end Aaron Jones in the 1988 draft, 18th overall. Old Aaron had 9.5 sacks for the Steelers over 5 years. So there's probably a reason you don't remember him.
Yeah, probably. Probably not. I don't even think they were in the 3-4 yet. But
that would have been 88. So he would have played up until almost basically until Cowher got there. So right. Some really poor team, not poor, but not great teams at the end of the Knoll era.
That'd be right, probably the last or second to last draft that Knoll had.
Right. So not a good one there. There were some good ones that made the honorable mention list. We had Leon Hall, longtime corner in the league drafted in 2007. Jeff Backus started for the Lions for like a decade on the offensive line, 2001. Willie Gault, it's kind of funny. Like, I think that's a guy a lot of people remember drafted in 1983 because he was, you know, sprinter speed, track speed, one of the faster guys, I think, in the history of the league, but really didn't produce much if you go look at his numbers. He had a couple of really big yards per catch years, but not a lot of catches. He was, of course, on the 85 Bears. And then Alfred Williams, kind of an interesting one. He was drafted in 91 by the Bengals. And then he had a all-pro season with the Broncos in 97. And that was like, kind of like it. So he was like average, all-pro. So that kind of stuck out. And then my very last cut was a guy that I remember well from the NFC East days. That would be Freddie Joe Nunn, who played for some really poor Cardinals teams drafted in 1985. A really solid defensive end for them. They moved him to a linebacker some, had quite a few sacks, a couple double-digit sack years, and a good player on a lot of bad teams.
Yeah, I remember Fred J. Nunn, too. So, yeah, those are names I'm familiar with. So, okay, those are some pretty big names that, you know, decent players that you cut here. So I'm interested to see who made the top five.
Yeah, my top three here is shaky, or at least the four and five. It was kind of like I felt like all these players were the same. But at number five, I went with Will Smith, drafted in 2004, defensive end by the Saints. He played all 9 years of his career in New Orleans. And I think what sticks out for me for him, maybe the reason that put him over, is his career with the Saints coincided with the best stretch in Saints history. So, you know, the Breeze teams, the 2000 Saints, obviously he was on the Super Bowl team. He appeared in 139 games, all for New Orleans. Only made one Pro Bowl. He had a couple double-digit sack seasons. He did have 13 sacks in 2009, the year they won the Super Bowl. And he played very well in the Super Bowl against the Colts. And then, not to be a total downer, but it would be weird not to mention it, he was killed in a road rage incident in 2016. Oh. Yeah.
Well, I was unaware of that. Oh,
boy. Yeah, kind of an ugly thing. It involved he and his wife and some random driver. I remembered it at the time, and then when I read about it, it kind of clicked a little bit. But yeah, I would say, you know, he's pretty high up there, and you know, for Saints fans, you know, a guy that was there through all of the best moments and the best times in their franchise, in their whole run of their franchise, really. He was consistent, prominent player for their defense.
Okay, I think a very solid pick. So who do you have at number four?
I got Ryan Kelly, drafted in 2016, was a center for the Colts. Very interesting, kind of like his quarterback that he played with when he was drafted. He retired, like Andrew Luck, he retired out of nowhere. Just was cruising right along, made four Pro Bowls, 2 second-team All-Pros, was cruising along to probably be one of the better centers in the league, and then just called it quits. But the reason I have him here above some of the other honorable mention guys is he peaked well higher than a lot of them. So he was kind of like on that track, and I got him number four.
Okay. All right. I think he's solid. What about number three?
Number three is one of the more polarizing quarterbacks, I think, in the history of the league in terms of when we're ranking where someone belongs. And I think you know who I'm going to talk about. I got a lot to say about him. And that is drafted in 2008 by the Ravens, quarterback Joe Flacco. So I'm going to ask you a question. How many Pro Bowls do you think Joe Flacco has made in his now 18-year career?
I'd say maybe one.
One. Do you know what year it was?
I'm going to guess maybe it was a Super Bowl year.
It was 2025, this past season.
Oh, really? This past year? Wow.
Which goes to show you how diminished the Pro Bowl has become, that has mattered. But also shows you that he never made it in any of these other years. We're not talking all pro.
Okay, wait. So I guess to put that in perspective, so 2025, not a very good year in Cleveland, but they had two of their quarterbacks make the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, kind of tells you all you need to know. I would say just such a strange career, Darren. So listen to this. So he had 72 wins over his first 7 years in the league. Then he had 35 wins over his next 11 seasons in the league. And he only had 5 wins over 4 full seasons prior to his run with the Browns in 2023. He's difficult for me because I can't figure out if he's just a stat compiler that's done a nice job to stick around. You know, how do we rank this guy? He's 14th all time in yards, top 15 in yards. He's 21st in touchdowns. And he also had a massive season in 2012. They won the Super Bowl. He was the Super Bowl MVP. And there was no doubt about it. I mean, he was great in that game. He was great that whole playoffs. Even in some other years where they didn't reach the Super Bowl, he played well in the playoffs in a lot of years. Was pretty clutch. So he's a really interesting Hall of Fame case to me. It's kind of hard to reconcile where it lands with everything with him. But definitely better than all of these other honorable mention guys that I've got on my list.
Yeah, he is an interesting case. I mean, I think maybe if you're going to say he has a downfall, it's because he's a statue. He has no running ability. He's not a threat at all to run, but he's an old school pocket passer who's got a big arm. Even to this day, I mean, the guy can throw a nice long ball that really, you know, set up his team for a big thing. You think about those the play in the Super Bowl, or was it Super Bowl or the NFC or the AFC Championship, where he threw that real long ball at the
AFC Championship game in Denver.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so you know he still has a really nice touch. I thought the Browns were crazy in 2023 when they let him go and he went to Indianapolis or whatever for that year. Right. I thought he was probably so productive for them at the end of the year coming off the couch that they should have probably signed him. I think Browns fans agreed with that too. And I guess they had buyer's remorse and brought him back last year and let him go again, traded him away to an interdivisional rival, you know, which is crazy. But yeah, I think a very solid pick. You know, I'm not sure if Hall of Famer I'd put on him, but definitely very a memorable quarterback.
Right. Yeah, for sure. It'll be interesting to see when he finally does retire, what the Hall of Fame does with him.
Yeah. All right. So who do you have above Joe Flacco?
So number one and two, I swear I didn't stuff the ballot box because of you and I here, but I think they're both legit. Number two, I've got Maurkice Pouncey, drafted in 2010, center by the Pittsburgh Steelers. Another guy that kind of retired a little bit abruptly, a 10-year career, 9 of those he was in the Pro Bowl, 5 All-Pro teams, 2 of them first team, All-Decade team for the 2010s, and I would say also a Hall of Fame case. Again, the only thing that you might hold against them a little bit is there's most Hall of Fame linemen played longer than Pouncey did, but I think he probably played long enough to go ahead and have that case. And like you and I always say, that All-Decade team is really important to me when I'm comparing these guys.
Yeah, he a couple things he had set back. He had an injury early in his career, took him out for most of the season. And then his next season, he comes back. I think it was his rookie season. His next season, he comes back. He takes out a Hall of Fame guard of the Steelers still for the season by trying to block a defender and ends up hitting his own guy. And then the snap of his very last game, that playoff game against the Browns, where he just like airballed one that the Browns recovered and end up just annihilating the Steelers in the playoff game.
Yep.
In a shootout. So I think those are kind of things. And for some the image of him sitting on the bench with Roethlisberger, tears in his eyes after the game.
Right.
Kind of a sad story to way to end your career, but very productive when he was playing and very solid, you know, follows that mold of the Steelers' really strong centers that they've had over the years.
For sure. No doubt. That's enough talk about the Steelers.
Okay.
Let's talk about number one.
Oh, okay. You want to go there. Okay.
Let's talk about number one. Number one is the great Art Monk, drafted in 1980 by the Washington Redskins.
Just made your cut.
Just made.
Of years.
I still have his poster in my garage. My Art Monk poster lives forever. A consistency would be the first word. You know, he actually had a bunch of people in the media, Peter King, who I'll never forgive, railed against him getting in the Hall of Fame, publicly lobbied against Monk to get in the Hall of Fame. And I think one of the, you know, one thing that if we'll start with maybe the reasons that people would lobby against him would be that his demeanor at the position was very different than a lot of receivers over the years. He was not showy. He was not flashy. He was very quiet, both in his personality and sort of in the way he played. So that right off the bat,
his last name was very befitting of his.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Yes. So, you know, so that stuck out. And then, you know, accolades wise, he doesn't jump out at you because he only was in three Pro Bowls and one All Pro team. The other thing that's important to consider, he never played for an air it out type offense. The Gibbs offense, a lot of deep throws. You know, they would go deep, but, you know, it was a ground control game through most of Monk's career where they threw it when they needed to throw it. But, you know, it was always going to be difficult to put up gaudy numbers in that offense. He made a ton of big plays. And then one thing that I always felt bad about was he didn't play in the 1982 postseason when they won their first Super Bowl. He was hurt. And then in the 87 postseason, when they won their second Super Bowl, he only played in the Super Bowl. He caught one pass for 40 yards in that game. So he was kind of quiet in those two Super Bowl runs. Thankfully, in 1991, when they won their third Super Bowl, he was healthy. And in the postseason only, in three games, Darren, he had 15 catches for 252 yards and a touchdown. He had five 1,000-yard seasons, okay? That doesn't necessarily jump out. But then he had five more seasons at 750 or more yards. So, again, we kind of talk about consistency. You know, he's just 10 years, 12 years, always there. And then I think the number one thing that pushes him over the top for me for being a surefire Hall of Famer is at one point in his career, he held the single-season catch record of 106, which is surpassed many times since, but at the time he set it. And then in 1992, he set the all-time receptions record. So at one point, Art Monk had more catches than anybody in a single season, and he had more catches than anybody in the history of the NFL, period. And so with those two things in mind, I always found it ridiculous that anybody would ever lobby against him to be in the Hall of Fame. An easy Hall of Famer, a great guy, and an all-time beloved Redskin. Number one.
I think he was likable throughout the league. You know, nobody, and because he wasn't flashy, he wasn't arrogant, he was a fairly humble guy, just went out and did his job, made plays, and a great player. So, yeah, I have no problem with him being number one. I have no problem with him being in the Hall of Fame with a bronze bust. Definitely deserving of that. And I think it's kind of cool that he saves all that playoff fireworks for that third time. You know, he's 11 years in the league and making up for lost time on the other two.
For sure, yes. Now, the only thing that does stink about that is he caught a touchdown in the game against the Bills. They reviewed it, and his toe was on the line. So he never got a touchdown in the Super Bowl, but he was very close.
If only he had a shoe size just one smaller, he would have made it, right?
Exactly, yep.
All right, well, very, very good. So we mentioned there are four Hall of Famers, of course, Monk being one of them, just making. So really no Hall of Famers since 1980 so far. Perhaps, you know, your number one and number two, they might be in the Hall of Fame someday. But we did have three others that were before 1980, and one of them has one of the greatest football names of all time. You know, we talked the other day about Mike Quick and, you know, talked about Max Speedy having appropriate names. Well, how about a name like Bruiser? Bruiser Kennard was drafted 18th in the 1938 NFL draft by a team that a lot of people may not recognize as a football team, but the Brooklyn Dodgers had a team back then, and that's who drafted Bruiser Kennard, and he was a great player, five-time Pro Bowler, four times All-Pro, tackle position, you know, very important in the 1930s football of the tackle, much like today, but a little bit different duties that they had back then. But yeah, great player there, and two-way player too, by the way, defensive and offensive tackle. And then in the 1953 draft, the Steelers took one of their Hall of Famers, John Henry Johnson, who also later played with San Francisco. I think he also played with the Houston Oilers near the end of his career. But John Henry Johnson, he was drafted by the Steelers, but he ended up playing for San Francisco first for some reason, and then came back to the Steelers later on in his career in the 60s. But, great back there, four-time Pro Bowler, one-time NFL champ with the Lions when he played with them. And our other Hall of Famer is Paul Kraus, who, you know, we've talked a lot about the Vikings Hall of Famers lately in these mid-rounds, and Paul Kraus is definitely one of those. Another defensive back, wide receiver, taken in the 1964 draft. The Denver Broncos also drafted him in the AFL draft. Ended up being drafted by the Redskins, believe it or not, and ended up going to the Vikings in the 1968, after playing a few seasons in Washington. So yep. Some great players there. That rounds out our Hall of Famers for slot number 18. Okay, so we also have, our most popular position drafted, if you're wondering, has been running back. 13 running backs over the course of 90 NFL drafts so far have been taken there. So maybe we'll have a running back taken in that slot. Not real a lot of them being taken in the first round anymore because the position's not as
high. Probably because of the history of this pick. It's not good.
Yeah, maybe not, but yeah. I think Julian Love will probably be taken long before that at running back.
Oh, for sure.
He'll probably be top five. And our draft stat of the day is kind of an interesting one. You know, this really talks about how certain professional football teams sort of get magnetized to selecting players from certain schools. The Chicago Bears have drafted 41 Notre Dame players over the 90 drafts, not all in the first round, but 41 total. And they're closely followed by the Steelers, who have drafted 35 Notre Dame players. So kind of an interesting stat there for Fighting Irish fans and NFL draft fans. That's our draft tip of the day.
I love it.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is 18, slot 18 down, and we have 18 days to go. We will be back tomorrow, just like we have in our 32-day voyage that we have going on here. Talk about slot number 17, the history of the players taken there, and we'll be right back tomorrow with Ed joining us to talk about this history.
See you tomorrow, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hi, everyone. There's a new podcast in town, Statman and Robin. We are the dynamic duo of Baltimore sports history.
We have lots of stories to tell about the great and not so great teams and players in Baltimore's rich sports history, and some of the more obscure ones too.
We grew up together with these teams and players, and we'll add our experiences to these great stories.
Yep, we were there for a lot of them. Join us here on the Sports History Network.